You are very welcome to Cawley's Call with me, Alan Cawley, powered by Benetti Menswear, a topical debate show covering all things Irish football, along with 1v1 interviews with top-class sports stars from a wide range of different sports.
It's me that's putting on the green jersey, me that's going to take flak from people to say, you're not even Irish. I was big enough to say, I'm going to take it.
There's many people I've spoke to, they always say, I used to put money on you scoring the first goal, but I've never seen any of that money, though.
And Andy, he says, I want the performances that I got from you in Scotland with the under-16s, not that rubbish that you gave me over in Iceland.
Hi, everyone, and you're very welcome back to Series 3, Episode 7 of Cawley's Call. Delighted to have you, as always. Busy times at the moment, so we're running and racing all over the place. We're in the middle of, obviously, the international window, so we've no games to review from Friday night, as you'll all know, because there was no Premier Division games. There was the First Division games, but we will preview this week's games, which are back. I have no Stewie with me today because, as I say, we are busy. Stewie's working at the Ireland match in a little bit as well. I'm actually working and we're rushing over there. But we do have a special guest in studio, somebody who we've wanted to get in for a while, because for two reasons. One, because he's familiar to us on our TV screens as a chef extraordinaire, and if anyone who watches the restaurant programme, you will be very familiar with that. But the other reason, and the most important reason, is we have never had a Finn Harps representative on the show. So I'm delighted to say, sitting in front of me is Mr. Gary O'Hanlon.
How's it going, Al?
Gary, good to see you.
Yeah, you too, mate.
How are you?
Proud 500 club member.
Okay.
For a long time. Harps have me robbed.
So you can get as much Finn Harps references in here as possible, because, as I say, this is our third series, and lots of them, I'm obviously from Sligo and the northwest area, but lots of people give me stick because we've never had any Finn Harps representatives as such. And it's not because I don't want them, it's just difficult maybe where they are and stuff. But the fact that you're a big fan, you're living near enough, but you're in Dublin today working as well, which helps. And we're delighted that you're able to join us. So how are you?
Listen, man, I've been trying all my life as a chef to try and make money or do something to talk about football. And every now and again, the off the ball boys have wheeled me in for off the OTB AM and here. And I keep saying to Tommy, man, you got to get me on more. But then I get into a rant about United and I ruin it and they don't bring me back.
Because anyone who does follow you on social media, you're quite vocal when it comes to the football. And you say Man United, Finn Harps, Stephen Kenny, the Irish team, you love it all.
Yeah, I do. Like, I suppose every chef, like, you know, I'm not really sure I like the word passionate, you know what I mean? But I'd be nearly as passionate about football as I am the cook, and you know what I mean? But I just live and breathe football. I mean, my Twitter has settled down now. Like, for many, many years in the early years, people be tweeting you saying, like, oh, I'm not following you to, you know, hear about United or hear about who scored for Harps or who didn't, or giving Bose fans grief on there. And I'm like going, you don't have to follow me. And I have no problem telling them to fuck off and don't be annoying me. And then, you know, the boss every now and again, I'm like, well, you're abusing somebody. I was like, listen, you know, it's everybody's choice. I love the game. I've loved it since I was four.
Since you were a kid.
Right from when I was a kid, yeah. I mean, I'm 43 now, and I remember sitting beside Christian Gurney on my first day in primary school. My older brother is a year older than me. Christian's older brother was a year older than him. So the two boys.
And you're Donegal, Gary. Yeah,
Remelton and Donegal, yeah. So Swilly Rovers and the Mariners would be our local club, like Ulster Senior League club that we would have grown up with. But, you know, the older brother was a Liverpool fan when they were good, but so I had to become. So my second day at school, I got a Man U bag. I went home crying after day one, and the old doll bought me a United bag for day two. And, you know, I've been through the many hard years of United, and then obviously the good years and back to the bad, yeah. But I just love the game, you know. I've always loved it, loved playing it.
You posted that picture the other day of obviously a former team in your fancy Predator boots. Fancied yourself as a bit of a player as well.
Listen, man, I love the crazy hairdo and I love the fancy pair of boots. So the white Preds, that was actually an old Leeds kit. We played in some tournament somewhere near Cape Cod, and I played for the Irish Village in Boston, which in the MSSL, the Mass State Soccer League, which would have got probably a lot of boys that maybe were on the peripheral of the MLS or never made it, like semi-pros. There was a lot of boys that maybe were, say, with Columbus Crew or the Revolution that maybe didn't quite make it, and then they came down, maybe went into other business. Guys coming on scholarships to the States, to Mount Ida, would have had a lot of football scholarships, like Finbar Clancy from Waterford, Tremor. He was an Irish schoolboy international around the Jeff Kenna. I think he was in the squad, whatever age group that was. He was a few years older than me. He was our striker. you know.
So what position did you play?
Well, I was a left winger.
Okay.
Yeah, I played left side of midfield, and so we had a really good team. I got better later in life. I'm a fat chef now, but I used to pray going to bed, like, to put on a wee bit of weight. I always was good in the ball, but I was too tiny. You know what I mean? Like, and you know, in Donegal and Saturday League and also Senior League and everything else, you needed strength. Like, I got strong, like, at 19, 20. So I enjoyed many a good year playing in Boston. You know, there was two Irish sort of teams, the Irish Village, which was basically our sponsor, like Diageo or Guinness, and the Irish Village, and Bohemians. There was a Bose over there. Like, yeah. That was based out of South Boston. We had Olympiacos, which was obviously a Greek squad of boys, and Greenbrier, then that was sort of English guys. They were quite good because there was a lot of scholarship guys from England, all over England, at different colleges in the area.
So decent standard.
A very good standard, actually, yeah. You know, probably on a par, like, with the Ulster Senior League or Junior Football, Leinster Senior League here, maybe, you know, not quite League of Ireland, but it was definitely really, really good, you know what I mean? Like anything, you probably had five or six ringers in every team, you know what I mean? Like, and then just good players. But yeah, definitely the football kept me in Boston probably 3 years longer. I lived there for nearly 6 years. I would have been happy to move on after a couple of years, but just had an unbelievable affinity to the players, their families, the team. And even still to this day, like, my core group of friends would be all of those Irish Village boys from my Boston days. Love them all the bits, man. And, you know, Samba.
Really fond memories to look back on.
Unbelievable fond memories, yeah. We never won a league title. Like, we probably got lost one by default. There was some sort of a problem 1 year where we lost it on goal difference or something. But we won a few. There was a cup competition out there called the Irish, a big newspaper called the Irish Immigrant, and they sponsored a tournament every summer. So I won that a few times, and one of my good buddies, Samba, Jason Milan, a Limerick man, a big Limerick dude, doing well for himself. He lives in Boston now. He managed us 1 year. Him and I are really tight today, but he was a left full through all my years as a left back, so we were fucking you like the things we said to each other. When you track back, you lazy bastard, you know what I mean? So, like, it was really, that was probably, you know, one of my best ever memories, was winning that cup 1 year with him. You know, it was probably the best football I'd ever played. Look, for the level that I got to, unbelievable memories. And the Leeds kit that you saw me in, like, we won this tournament one day where there was a few players from different clubs.
Because that stuck out straight away, because I was obviously over there. Yeah. So that jersey, as soon as I spotted it, I was thinking, what's
going on?
You're
a Strongbow boy. Yeah, what's I was going to say. Yeah. So we would have had things like that there, like, with, you know, every year Carlsberg had a big tournament. Like, I went to South Carolina in a tournament 1 year. Some of the boys had visas, some boys didn't have visas. It used to be tournaments in Montreal every year. Where a couple
so
of
it ring- sounds to me, Gar, if you were in America for work reasons,
I was, yeah.
But it sounds like the football had totally taken over.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, do you know, you're young, you're living a good life, man. I mean, I've always been very, very focused on my career. You know, I had an amazing job. I was head chef at Devlin's, and I opened a few restaurants for that group while I was over there. But again, you know, you're meeting guys, you're playing football, you're making buddies. I was like, I went over there at 21. You know, you're earning an awful lot of money, no mortgage, no ties, just sports cars, fast paced life, partying, football, and work. I was so dedicated to work. It was really, I mean, for me, I had to be really careful with all my training. I mean, I had a gym at the house, and I would have been, you know, really dedicated to, you know, not the best player in the team, but definitely that sort of mentality, the Gary Neville, Roy Keane mentality. I've always prided myself on, you know, I can't beat you over 100 metres, but in the 85th minute, 90th minute injury time, you're not going to catch me because I'll still be going. So I would have definitely been, you know, very committed to fitness and just having an engine, you know what I mean? And yeah, like, I worked hard, and, you know, I might not have got off, say, for training every night, or we would have trained two or three nights a week, and then the game's nearly always a Sunday. Quite often I'd go into the restaurant at 5 on a Sunday, leave, go play the game, and then come back and finish dinner, just so that I had the days or the nights off then during the week for training. So honestly, my whole work week evolved around training and match days. Yeah, yeah, so
you took that really seriously.
Well, yeah, it's just like we're being a chef, you know, like, and you know, they pay big beans for the first couple of boys, and you need to be there. And Devon's was a new restaurant then, and just, yeah, I just had to be there an awful lot, you know what I mean? Like, but look, I got to play and I got to go through all them years, and then we had indoor. I mean, Stevie Nicol would have played in an indoor league. Okay. I would have been a part of. We used to go out to Burlington, and Jesus, there was nights we played out there at like 11 o'clock at night. We'd drive an hour out, me and Misha. He works for Mediacom now. He's in the football world as well. Misha Scher, he was a great player, came from Columbus Crew, probably the best player in the league, and we lived together. But we lived and breathed football, you know. Like, we would go, honestly, and play Astro at 11 o'clock at night in a place called Burlington. And the Revs used to have, like, you know, a management team there. The odd time, like, you'd play against Stevie Nicol, which was pretty cool for a guy that was fixated on the game growing up. And you're like, Jesus Christ. Like, I mean, he's a bit older now, like, but he still had a
great
bit of,
player, Nicol.
Oh, fine player in his day. I mean, he was part of that great Liverpool side, you know what I mean? So, yeah, it was always up until I tore a cruciate in 06. Like, I just always played, and then
It absolutely shines through, the passion you have, as I say, just for supporting, but even listening to you now and all the years you played. Was it something, I suppose, the chef side of things, because you've obviously done very well and very successful through all that. Was that something that you always wanted to be from a young age as well?
Oh, yeah. Like, I was either a chef or a pilot, and I'm not that good with flying these days, so it's a good job I became a chef, you know, although I have to fly a lot for work. But, no, I always had a love of food, always wanted to be a chef, and went through school, obviously, and then the Rosapenna up in Downings. My mum's from that neck of the woods. I'm from Remelton. She's Carrigart Downings area. And my aunt is the head chef in the Rosapenna. I mean, some of the best links golf courses in the world up there. So I got in there the night I finished my junior cert, and I was thumbing my way down to Downings, packed up, and I went in to wash the pots. And then back then, getting into college and Tourism College Killybegs wasn't that easy. So you needed to have a few years experience. So every summer, Easter or break I had, I'd say, to school up until doing my leaving. And then I did a separate set of exams that you had to do then at that time as well to get into catering college. And, yeah, I just always wanted to go down that route. I mean, academically, I was good. I loved school. Mammy was very strict with us, so we had no choice. It's given me a great life. I mean, it's a hard life. But look, I'm around the media an awful lot as well, and I see how hard people in that. I mean, lots of jobs are hard and tough. You know, the beauty about mine, as I used to talk to Granny, God rest her, was, you know, no matter where in the world I would go, I could adapt and I would be able to earn money and work. And as simple as it sounds, that was always what she talked to me about and always what I thought about too, you know. And sure enough,
so you those know, kind of old school values
just,
always.
Aye, old school values, aye. Like, you know, just go, love food, and really just applied myself to a career, you know what I mean? And look, it's coming out the other side. Like, it's tough going, but I'm not going to say I love it. I mean, I do love it. Like anything, you go through periods like where, like, Jesus, is hard going, you know. But, you know, I have a great job now, and it's going fantastically well, and long may it last, you know.
Is it as difficult being a chef as what we perceive it to be?
Yeah, and probably more so, you know. Like, I mean, you see the shows and you see the high-paced environment. I mean, it depends on what level you cook at, you know what I mean? Obviously, you know, you hear all the things about, you know, tough kitchens and loud kitchens. I mean,
does that go on?
Well, not really. Like, it's not tolerated, you know what I mean? Like, but it's definitely, like, at the higher end of the scale, like, it's very disciplined. You know, there's a very, you know, blurred line or fine line between, I suppose, discipline and loud. But there's definitely, you know, I've never seen abuse or any of that kind of crack or whatever. It's definitely there, I'm sure, or whatever. But, you know, it's not tolerated. It's a very, very different world to the 80s. And you hear the horror stories coming out of London in particular, like, and high-end guys there and well-known chefs and whatnot. But, you know, it's too hard to get staff, mate. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, there's so many places to work, so many fantastic chefs around the country. And, you know, it's definitely becoming a far nicer environment. Maybe, you know, less nights or less day. People, you know, owners and operators are having to become a whole lot more aware of the pitfalls of cooking and being away from, you know, it's even only a few years ago I went into the corporate world as a director of a company Monday to Friday. And, you know, I'm 27, 28 years cooking now at a high level. And, you know, that's the first time that I'd experienced Monday to Friday. And it really affected me, you know, for nearly a year. I was like, Jesus, like, the amount of things I was missing out on, I was nearly better off not knowing. I mean, being able to go to the Harps, being able to go watch Longford Town when they're at home on a Saturday night, go up and watch the Harps. You know, I have this thing where I try to follow the Remelton boys. If I can't get the Donegal, you know, I might try to go to the Showgrounds to see Cal McFadden play, and I played with his old boy back in the day, or, you know, go watch Derry. If Derry's playing Pats, like Ronan Boyce, I played with his daddy and uncles.
Really, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, all them. Keith Cowan now has gone to Drogheda. Mm. Barry McNamee was in Cork. We would have went to Cork. So a big, big thing for me, if I can't get to the Harps, try and get to follow one of the Remelton boys is always my thing, and support them, you know what I mean? Because that's... it's a big deal to me. It's a big deal that they're in the league. It's a big deal that they've come from the hometown. And you know, I just love the league. Like, I've always loved it and support it. Just watching football, sure, what better?
Yeah, it's brilliant. And I suppose that love for Finn Harps, because, as I say, when I was a young kid growing up, it was the Showgrounds for us. So once... the biggest introduction for me and the memories I have was we used to go on a Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock, the games, whatever. Then when, for the first time when we got floodlights, it was around the Willie McStay era.
Yeah.
And Willie was over from Celtic and the team started to do well. There was an influx of Scottish players, British players, whatever the case may be. And Saturday night in the Showgrounds was just incredible for me. It was like going into the San Siro, you know, it was that kind of atmosphere.
Oh, and I get that totally.
Yeah, and that was my, that's where it started for me. I was lucky enough to go play then, and obviously I'm so involved with it now and love it. But was it as early for you, say, the Ballybuffet days or Finn Harps back then?
Oh, I suppose, like, I went to St. Union's then as well, because I live in the Letterkenny side. I mean, I wanted to go to Milford because it was women in act school. It was a mixed school, and the old doll was like, no chance. You're going to St. Union's. End of fucking story. And that's so it.
It sounds like you were proper rock and roll when
you
were growing
up. Yeah, yeah. I was a blackguard. Pierce didn't need to be watched half as much as me, but he went there. It was either walk a half a mile to the bus or walk a mile to the bus every day. So it was a half a mile in Letterkenny, the big concrete jungle, as I called it, Unions. And, you know, those fucking Letterkenny boys that got in there, I hated every one of them, do you know what I mean? Because we would have, you know, at the underage level, you know, was Swilly Rovers, obviously, and then became the Mariners. So, you know, you would have had Kilmacrennan, Letterkenny, Fannett, United, like all these boys, like all the different
big
parishes.
Rivalry.
Big time, yeah, like at underage level, and then going up. But St. Union's at that time was a boarding school, so I suppose you would have been trying to get into the school teams or playing on the school teams, like with Fannett boys and guys from here, there and everywhere, really. So obviously Charlie McGeever was teaching at the time in St. Union's as well. I did PE with Charlie. Ollie Horgan taught me science, and Ollie taught me, okay, at school, yeah. And then he would have managed a wee bit. Like, he was never really in, well, he would have been involved with teams, but in that them early days, like, I don't know if he ever coached them properly all the way through, but he definitely.
So how many years have we gone back here?
Well, I was at Union's from 1990 to 95. Yeah, okay. So 90 to
Ollie,
so,
back then.
Well, Ollie, he was teaching then, big time, and he was playing with Fannett United. He was left full for Fannett United because I used to be shouting abuse at him. It's Swilly Park back in the day. He was hard as nails. Hey,
Ollie.
Oh yeah, okay. Jesus. He, and you know, he had that mad flowing haircut, the same mad hair that he has today. He just, you'd see him, you know, and obviously you're on the sideline. Like, Swilly Park is actually all my family. So Granny and Granddad's house is at the, not the town end, but the other goal. It's literally wrapped around. So if Granny and Granddad's house, God rest them there, and then my Aunt Kate, my Uncle Michael, and my Aunt Jean, all along the sideline, like at the houses. Okay. So that whole area.
Why is it
area,
not called O'Hanlon Park?
I know, it should be called O'Hanlon Park, but all that area would have been my grandfather's sort of farming land where we grew a lot of stuff and whatnot. So that's real. Swilly Park is real home territory to us, you know. So I would have seen Ollie many a day playing there. And then, obviously, I can really see, you know, why he's so strategic and manages to bring players from here, there and everywhere. A really, really intelligent man. I mean, you'd see Ollie and you might see him out for a pint or after a game, and he's He's a mad, lovely personality, really out there, you know. But I'll tell you, man, and he is a really intelligent dude, knows how to piece together a squad, has figured out a way, you know, on our budgets to keep us in the league for the last amount of years. But, you know, with him having...
So how highly is he regarded, Ollie, say, in the Donegal area?
Well, we love him, you know what I mean? Like, as a Harps fan, you know... Like, the Harps fans probably come from here, there, and everywhere. You know what I mean? Like, it's in Balbuffet. You know, I'm going since probably around that time, like the mid-90s. You know what I mean? Like, it's... I think Paddy McGranahan might have played his last under-17 game for Fannett, and I had the fucking misfortune of marking him. I've never felt so small in a football pitch in all my days. That was the era of Harps that I really loved. I mean, I loved him. Johnny Minnick playing left-back up the wing. You know what I mean? Paddy McGranahan, right side, he was lovely on the ball. It was glued to his toe, you know what I mean? He was a man when the rest of us were wee boys as well, you know what I mean? So he was destined to go into the league. There was a guy had played with us at school called Garrett O'Callaghan. I know
Garrett well. He had a spell with Sligo Rovers.
Yeah, he was a whippet, you know. Like, I always felt he might have maybe stayed in the league. Garrett Gorman, you might be thinking about. Yeah. Gaza Gorman was at Galway United then as well for a while. Well, Gaza was a few years ahead of me at Unions. And Tony Gorman, then his cousin, player. Class.
Tony was brilliant. Tony was one of my favourites growing up.
Oh, man. What Tony a lovely... Fantastic. Yeah, he was brilliant at Linfield, had a great time. What a lovely player. Yeah. Like, he could control the game. Gaza was very exciting, played left side. One of my first jobs after college, and that was in Galway, before moving to Boston in 99. I would have got the tail end of his career down in Galway, and I think he may be married and living there now. But
lovely fella as well, Garrett.
Yeah, good guy, and good to watch. You know what I mean? So yeah, I used to thumb from Galway even on a Saturday, as you say there. I totally get what you're on about. Like, you're a Wembley, like Finn Park as well.
Yeah.
For us, I mean, the Brandywell had lights outside of the Dublin team. The Brandywell always had lights.
The lights changed everything.
The lights changed everything for anybody though. When you go to a floodlit game and you're eating a lovely greasy bag of chips, saw loads of salt and vinegar in your stand, Jesus, man, I tell you, there's nothing better anywhere.
We had days, like, I think back the memories, and I say McStay's team, he brought this fellow from Scotland, Eddie Annand. He scored a hat-trick as one night in the showgrounds. It's as good a hat-trick as I've ever seen. There was this little dink chip. Was a kind of overhead kick. There was three goals that were always, when I think back, and it was the time when we were young, the shed behind the goals, and you used to have to walk out through that, the players, and they'd be giving them dogs abuse and all. But if the team scored, they all made a surge down to the fence, and the players would run to the fence. Yeah, these are the memories you have grown up like.
Amazing.
Now, thankfully, the showgrounds looks great now, and they've made huge strides over the years. And even, like, no more than yourself, and we've had conversations on Twitter, and I see your passion for it. It was always neglected, and we know the reasons it was neglected, and I don't want to go down that road, but just in terms of, say, this year, where it's at, and the league, for the first time we feel, because obviously me and Stewie are preaching about it every year, and we have a love for it and a passion for it, but for the first time this year, and the bigger picture with Steve managing the national team, a change in regime at the FEI, it just feels like Irish football is on a different trajectory at the moment, kind of.
Oh yeah, like it's amazing in such a short span of time, like over the last even 3 years, like wouldn't even go back as far as 5 years. There's definitely a big, big wave. COVID definitely would have maybe played into our hands a wee bit. Well, you could say COVID as well, in the sense that, you know, people couldn't go over and back to England as much, and maybe they started taking a wee sampling. But it was way before that. I mean, you know, even when all that was happening, not to go down the COVID route, because attendances were obviously capped a wee bit as well. But I think the likes of you being on air, the likes of Stewie being on air, OTBAM, Game On, all the coverage, I mean, in an ideal world, we'll have more TV coverage as well off the league, you know what I mean? Like, but it definitely gets into the heart and soul of a player. I mean, if you can go to a ground and there's League of Ireland games on, or Premier Division games, or First Division games, it's amazing. I mean, there's a big culture of GAA in Ireland and all around, you know what I mean? And the big stadiums and the money. I'm always amazed, because suppose, like, Donegal's very segregated in the sense that you've got places like Remelton that would have been maybe a predominantly Protestant town, a plantation town, going way back. Until we got a new principal in our primary school, we didn't have Gaelic nets.
Okay.
So we would have played Gaelic for Milford. They would have taken the best five players out of Remelton, Kilmacrenan, Ballyar, and then Milford itself. So at underage, we had an unbelievable gas side. But there was no real there was no real GAA culture in our town. So for us, it was all about football. But then if you go 45 minutes further north to where I would have started my career, you put the ball on the deck. I mean, I remember putting the ball on the deck and busting nets, playing Gaelic and scoring and being abused by your own fans. Like, what are you doing? What are you doing? And I'm like,
because you see, I was a townie.
Yeah.
So the townies and what we call
townies were footballers.
Yeah, all, and that's why Sligo's mad soccer town.
Yeah.
But then the Gaelic, St. Mary's, St. John's, whatever, they were trying to tap into the bit of talent that was there, because generally, if you were good at soccer,
if you're good at one, you're good
you
at the other.
Gaelic, so they were mad to get the talent through. But we used to go up and just play soccer.
I know.
And it used to drive them up, get out, and run us out of the place.
Well, basically, I was at the same blagyard you were at. You know what I mean? But I love the Ga too. But you know, for me, it would be the one thing, and I do think it's coming. I mean, there's no way it's not going to be noticed. I see the attendances. I see the attendances at the League of Ireland grounds growing and growing and growing. I really see the attendances growing at the Aviva. You know, I was an hour on the canal going home after the game on Saturday night. I said to Ned, he goes, fuck me, I preferred it when there was 10,000 in the Aviva. I got home an hour quicker. And she was like, what? And I says, I was trying to figure out what was happening. And I was amazed, by the way. I could cry with happiness for Stephen Kenny.
Really?
I really could. He's an incredible man. He's a great football man. He's going to fucking change the game for us here. All these years, and I loved Martin O'Neill, and I'm a big Keno fan, right? But this shite of trying to tell the players you're not good enough, and all, I don't know how many times I heard that. And it's the only slight I have on Keno or Martin O'Neill. As always, all we don't have the players, we don't have. I'm going to League of Ireland games, Ulster Senior League games, games around Dublin, Boston, you name it, right? I've watched boys play ball on the deck in every League of Ireland ground. I really, really have. All the way up through the age group, right? It was only whenever we got to the fucking national, the elite of football in Ireland, that boys were being told they weren't good enough. And I was like, going, it's utter nonsense. You know what I mean? Stephen has brought in a big belief there. He's, you know, there's a lot to be said about a man manager and somebody tells you you're good enough all the time. I mean, you feel 10 feet fucking tall. And football is a confidence game. Cooking is a confidence game. You know, when it's happening for you and you have that fear factor removed, that if you drop a bomb from 25 yards and it goes into row fucking Z, who cares? Let's just keep moving it forward, playing out from the back. I remember the Serbia game. I was standing watching, and me fucking nerves. I was back of my nerves. You know, boys taking it out from the back effortlessly. And
I'm able to do it.
Well, I'm still trying to get used to it. Yeah, you know what I mean? I'll be sitting in the seat like, oh, jeez. I mean, I contradict myself now. I'll be like, going, get rid of her.
But he's so... If Stewie, it's a pity Stewie's not here, because there'd be a man hug going on now at the moment, because obviously Stewie was always banging the drum.
And
well,
he was a fine player himself.
Yeah,
because
played with Stephen.
Stewie was a midfielder, you know, he was lovely on the ball and he appreciates that, you know what I mean?
And you're right, look, I played in the league with the best of players. Wes Hoolan was the best player we ever played with, and it was unbelievable.
I was fucking screaming about Wes Hoolahan. Way, way early doors. I'm like, mate, how is this guy?
I first came across him under 15, right, with Belvedere. So when I was going to Leeds, I agreed that I'd sign, but they wanted me to sign basically the first time my mum and dad came over, and I says, no, I'll go home for a year and come over then when I'm 16.
Mm-hmm.
So they says, well, if you're going home for that year, we want you to play at the highest level you can play at back in Dublin, which was fine.
Fair enough.
Which was the DDSL. So the manager of our Ireland under 15s at the time was a man called Vincent Butler, and he was heavily involved with Belvedere. So we said it to Vincent and he says, yeah, we'll have you up in Belvedere, no problem. So I used to travel up and down every Sunday. But the first day we went up, Gaz, right, this is a true story. First day we went up, my dad drove up, we knew nobody. So a couple of the managers welcomed us in. And back then, the warm-up was literally, there's the ball, and kick it around for 10 or 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then the manager will call you and you'll be throwing out jerseys. So calls us into the little huddle, and there was this little fella who took me eye. Now, when I say little fella, I mean he was that size, right? And he took me eye in the warm-up, and under 15, a few big lads. In my head, I was thinking, this little fella, he couldn't be playing. He must be one of the manager's son, just having a little kick around before the match. So that was grand anyway. And next thing, calls us in, and he starts throwing out the jerseys. So number one, number two, going around everyone. I think number eight came to me, then number 11. And the little fella was still in the huddle, throws him the jersey. And in my head, I'm thinking, oh my God, this little fella can't be playing. He'll get murdered, right? So that was fine. I had a kind of warm up top, so I remember running over to the side of the pitch to my dad, just gave him the top and put on the jersey. And he even said it to me.
Yeah.
He says, that little fella couldn't be playing, is he? He says, well, they're after giving him a jersey. I don't know. Right? So ran out and he said, look, good luck in the game. Next thing, kick off. Ball played out to this little fella on the wing. He starts flicking it through their legs, up over their head.
One.
I mean, he just stole the show, guy, right? I came off the pitch and the game was over and I sat back into the car and myself and my dad just turned and looked at each other and just said, the little fella. And that was him. Turns out that was Wezzo.
Well, that brings me to, you know, maybe at a different level. Shane Sweeney, I always remember Union's first day. He missed the first few weeks, like a PE. And you got, I mean, back then it was just all football. You just played football. Like, that's what we did. And I remember Shane Sweeney, I think he might have played with Harps while I was in Boston. I'm not fully sure. But he played left full for Fannett United. When Fannett United were probably a better team than Harps, okay, like for a long period of time, Jesus, they had some incredible players. But Shane Sweeney, I mean, I was tiny, whatever, and Sweeney went out. The nicest left foot I've ever seen in the flesh. Oh,
unbelievable.
Unbelievable. I mean, from a free kick, he just never, ever put a foot wrong, you know. And, you know, you have these players through the years. There was a guy as well in that Ollie Horgan, China McGeever area, because Patsy McGowan would show his face Patsy every now and again, you know, at PE or underage games for the school. And, you know, if Harps managers are there and they're taking, like, and Charlie would have been a player manager for a period whenever he was teaching at St. Union's. I think he lives around Tipperary now, but he was up there around the time he was playing with Harps, teaching and playing. And, you know, the boys just, they would sign whoever was looking good. You see, you'd have the local clubs going fucking mental, like going, you know, Timmy Burke leaving Kilmacrenan, Gareth Callaghan maybe leaving whatever club, I'm not sure where he was from geographically, in Donegal, but there's a boy, Timmy Burke. You know, everybody probably has a school where you think, like, how did he not? I'd say Timmy was another Paul Gascoigne, like, you know, and again, you might go to application or maybe didn't want to leave home, or do I know you went over to Leeds or whatever. It's not easy to go whenever you're young, but, like, geez, but I think
the sad thing with Wezzo, though, Gar, going back to say the point with Stephen Kenny, was the reason, because I used to meet up then for Irish squads, and this fella was running amok. I mean, we play every week, he was the best player. And
overlooked.
Because of his size, purely because of his size. Now, he was very, very small, don't get me wrong, but that was the reason. Whereas if he was Spanish, if he was Juliano or whatever it was, Italian, they would have lapped that up because obviously there was more focus on the technical side. Whereas you look at Stephen now, you mentioned the game Saturday, the Serbian game where we're obviously playing. And to be fair, in the league, it's a better technical brand of football. Yeah. But Wezzo would have flourished under that. Like.
Oh, would have flourished, surely. And look, that's the thing. I mean, sure, if you go back as far as the, you know, the style of Jack Charlton, you know what I mean? I mean, he bypassed one of the best players we ever had in Liam Brady.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, whenever you think about it, you imagine being a Dutch manager or an Italian manager and saying, well, look, no real need for Liam Brady. They'd be like, going, are you well in the head? Like, but, you know, for the way he was going to play, I was like, going, well, I don't need quality there. I need a body for set pieces. I don't need you. And, you know, that was obviously well documented through the years. And, you know, you look at Xavi, Messi, some of the better players, Modric through the years, they're
Verratti
small.
Verratti at the minute.
Yeah.
They're unreal.
Verratti, unbelievable. Bruno Fernandes isn't all that big, you know what I mean? Like, but it's as you say, though, it's a much more technical game today, and it's definitely, you know, maybe the way Ireland play. You still need big boys in certain positions, you know, but definitely people need to be good on the ball. But
have you ever met Stephen?
Oh, man, he's a fan of the restaurant. So I was a guest at Viva one night and used to do this thing, like, we're off the ball with the Packy Lee from Peaky Blinders and me were usually paired together a few bits. So they bring in a few people that actually knew something about football and then bring in me and Packy the odd time or a few others. So I'm at the Aviva for the Denmark game, right, the playoff one where we looked, by all accounts, we were going to win it, like 1-0 up, maybe should have went 2 up. Fucking Ericsson gets a hat-trick, I think, that night, right? I sat beside Stephen for that match, right? And he said, he goes, you're going to have to go see a doctor tomorrow. I was never saying, he goes, you're fucking mental. So Nathan Murphy was just like the other side of Stephen, and then it was Stephen, and then it was me. And, you know, Stephen was a guest that night, like, and he was interviewed before the game at halftime, and we were chatting, and, you know, he talked about living around Donegal or near Derry from his Derry days and whatnot. And I had one of the, you know, this is way before he became the Ireland manager, well, only a couple of years before he became Ireland manager, you know, like, but I'd always admired his teams, you know what I mean? I talked to him a lot, and then he was like, oh, I know you from the restaurant. I nearly died, man. I was like, holy shit, him and his partner, like, watched the restaurant, and I was beaming.
The restaurant's huge, though, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's a big, just, look, it's on. I mean, I feel like I'm the new guy, but I'm on it 10 years at this stage, like, you know what I mean? It's been going for maybe 13 or 14 years with a wee bit of a gap, like, but yeah, he was familiar with it. I watched that game with him, and the one thing, though, right, when you think, you know, in hindsight then, I've often gone back to it, like, well, how composed he was watching that. You know, he's watching it from a whole different technical perspective to me. I was just on the edge of my seat.
Proper
going
fan.
I mean, when Eriksen hit the one where he dropped one from downtown at the top corner, how I didn't go out over the fucking edge. You know, the way outside the boxes, I was. Because the dream was over then. I was like, we're not going to the tournament. It's all over. Jesus, I was devastated, you know what I mean? But no, I've been in his company, and
he's so passionate, cares so much.
He really, really does, you know, just a good, good guy. And I mean,
but this is the point about it, because even think back of, say, why maybe the league was neglected here. There was such a sense of snobbery, people looking down their nose at the league. I have experienced that as players and all, because we never felt like players until the recent years. Stephen was always one for, and that's why even you go back to Ollie with. Pat Dolan was another one. Pat Finn, great characters that would always push and promote the league, but they were always shouted down or pushed down. Whereas Stephen was always an admirer and always adamant that, look, we have players that can play. Now when he's taken on, whereas other people might look at a Premier League job, other managers, as their dream job, the national team for him was the dream job. This was it. It doesn't get any bigger than what he's doing at the moment.
Sure, of course it's a big job. And, you know, like, whatever about the previous regime too in Delaney, but the one thing, the only one thing that they ever did right was that succession plan. I mean...
Now, that's a total fluke, though. There was no way he planned that as...
All right. Well, I'm okay with not giving him any credit for anything as well. So,
that's what I mean.
So it's got fuck all to do with Delaney.
Because in my eyes, he should have given it to him straight away.
Well, I will say that, you're dead right there, right? But I do think that the benefit of it was a few more a year or two, whatever it was, with that under-21 side as well. And, you know... I suppose the automatic big one for him, like, going in there and giving League of Ireland boys a chance. I mean, the only time I ever had a problem with Stephen Kenny was I thought he should have given Jack a wee bit of a run earlier doors, like, with the national team. Like, he was really, really standing out with Rovers at the time, and then obviously went to Cyprus and he's back now. But again, look, he knows what he's doing, and you have to trust that process. It was nearly one of those things where the likes of maybe you, the likes of older boys maybe in the media that would have been big, big League of Ireland advocates, maybe we all said too much and it was all too much about Jack. And then maybe the stubborn side of him.
Yeah, and say, there's that too.
Don't fucking tell me who I'm going to play in the team. And you know, I often think, like, geez, I wonder did it actually work against Jack a wee bit, like, you know what I mean? But he was the one at the time when he came on board that really, really stood out, that he could easily transition into that.
Yeah, Jack's unbelievable talent. Jack, like,
fabulous.
As much as I love the league here, and you go and watch him, Jack's too good for the league here, to be brutally honest. And that's no slight on the league here.
Yeah.
That's the talent that he has.
Yeah.
Now that he's back.
I'd love to see him getting a back in there.
But I think he will, Gar, because the reason being, and this is where I would say it's a good thing for him being at Shamrock Rovers in this league, see, he's at home, around his family, around his mum, who he's very close to, and he's happy. And that's reflected.
He's like Barry McNamee. Barry McNamee.
So reflected.
He plays his best football at Derry or now with Finn Harps. Like, he's getting a bit older now, like, but those brilliant years with Derry, you know, he's next
lovely
door to mammy.
He's
next door to mammy and daddy. So I know Barry since he was a baby, and his old boy I would have played with. I mean, Tony was older than me, but, you know, his mammy's an unbelievable player.
Really?
His mammy, Nancy McLaughlin, brothers, Con McLaughlin, Liam McLaughlin, two of the best players the league has ever seen.
Wow, really?
I think they're the record goal scorers for Harps. That's his mammy. His old boy, Tony McNamee, a worldie of a player. So then you have Barry, you have Tony, and wee Shane, I think, might be on the books at Derry as well. I love Barry. He's a fabulous, fabulous player. He's an even nicer boy, a really, really good guy. So I've really followed his career, like, for years. You know, I mean, at one stage, you had Barry McNamee from Remelton, captain of Derry. You had Keith Cowan, Swilly man, lives the other side of Granny's house at Swilly Park. Keith Cowan at Drogheda now. Yeah. Keith was the Harps captain.
Well, Kevin's my best friend, the Drogheda manager.
Yeah.
And Kevin obviously signed Keith this year, and he speaks really highly of him. Yeah. Just as a good
They'll stop leaking goals if he starts. just to let you know, brother. Get him in there.
tell me about McNamee then, because I would have followed McNamee for years because he has that lovely cultured left foot. So yeah. I would like him for that reason alone. Then obviously he's a very good player. But there was an argument when I remember... I think it was after he left Cork and there was talk of maybe going to Sligo Rovers. But some people were throwing out the fact that he took the easy option, that he just was going back home, that he didn't want to really commit to full-time football. And it was down to a lack of application or something. Now, I don't know that. I'm only hearing what kind of was being bandied about. Would that be him at all?
Well, No way. Look, I would never get that personal with him or ask him that or ever see him. You know, but he's a really, really quiet dude.
Seems like very quiet.
Oh, my God. Like, keeps everything to himself, you know. Like, look, he works at home. He's in the hospital in Letterkenny and he does that. You know, he's probably at a stage where he sort of felt, right, but if I wasn't going to go across the water playing at Derry. And, I mean, Derry gives you a really good platform as well. I mean, it's a big club, big history, you know. Really, really good side, and he was playing the football of his. I really thought somebody across the water was going to take.
Quality.
Well, he was one player of a handful. You know, every sort of generation has a handful that you say, Jesus, you know, you could move on again. I think the league has got this stage where there's big enough crowds now, and some of the clubs here are big enough that they can pay them well enough that they don't need to be looking down that route anymore. You know what I mean? But one thing I can guarantee you is application from Barry McNamee was absolutely no chance. Mm. I mean, the guy, he walks to the fucking shop for a paper with a football in front of him. I've seen it happen. He walks past mommy and daddy's front door.
You
know what I mean? So, you know, he likes being at home. I imagine, you know, definitely when I went to watch him at Cork, I went to Turner's Cross a couple of times. He was a different player. I don't know, you know, who he lived with there or whatever, and with a couple of boys. That was really his first time leaving home.
And I totally get that. I was homesick when I went.
And listen, regardless of what age you are when you leave home, it's for some people and it's really not for others.
Yeah.
I mean, if he's going home to Nancy and he's getting dinner and he's getting looked after, he's in his own bed and he's training, he's in and out to Derry or he's in and out to Balbuffet, depending on what period we're talking. And that's a really... you know, solid, his partner's up there and whatever. And then you go down to Cork. Like, Cork is as fucking close to Donegal as Swahili. Well, do you know what I mean? Like, I get to France quicker for work than I do going home to Donegal. And, like, Cork to Donegal, it's just, you know, you're getting home every now and again. And maybe, you know, the manager's maybe not giving him the same love as what he was maybe getting in Derry. But, look, he's back where he's loved. He's back where he's adored. He stands out a mile at Finn Harps. And, you know, we have a lot of grafters up there, but I was up at the Pats game. Chris Forrester's one of the best players in the league. He never got a fucking sniff all night. No harm to Forrester. He's a lovely player, but Barry bossed him the whole night, start to finish. Dry your wee tears there walking off Forrester. You know, I'm taking no taxes at this time.
I was there. Lots of hostility here.
I watched it with my own bare eyes. Barry was amazing.
Okay,
we lost the game now 2-0, so Forrester can have his laugh there. They had a couple of chances. I was obviously up for the Drogheda game. The Drogheda game is going to be Monday night. Now, our first game of the season would have been Drogheda. Got snowed off. I think your first Rovers game might have got the bad weather as well.
Yeah, Bohemians.
At Bowes, was it? Yeah, but I got up for the, you know, a couple of the games. I was back in France for work and I never got to go. But I got up for the Pats game, and so I thought we played really, really well.
And actually against Dundalk, there should have been two or three up. Great chances before, yeah.
Jesus, man.
So you wouldn't be too concerned about the start they've made. It was obviously a great result, the last game against Shelburne, beating them 3-0.
Big time, yeah. Big result against Shelburne, you know. Like, I mean, I hope people don't start piling on and Duffer either, like with the Garista, you know, wanting the big name manager to feel, you know. Like, I think the only thing I'd have a problem with them is taking Boyd off. As you know, he's a good player, good finisher. I think he's going to have a good career in the league. You know, he did really well for us. Never always started, but it's tough. We usually play one up top, you know. But, you know, Tunde went to St. Pat's as well. You know, like, we really miss him. Like, the speed and the power, pace. I don't think he's going to get a ton of game time with the two Doyle boys at St. Pat's.
Hard for him.
Tunde should have stayed. And, you know, he should have stayed. I hope you're listening to this, you bollocks. You know what I mean? He should have stayed.
Okay. You've been so good with your time, Gar, and it's bursting out of you. You're nearly more passionate than me. What the fuck is going on here? But the whole... Because I really admire Ollie. I don't know Ollie. Now, I know Gavin Dykes very well, who's obviously got in, so I know Dykes really well from Sligo, and he always speaks so highly of Ollie. They're, of course, friends.
Dykes was a player.
Well, Dykes would go through you for a shortcut.
Fuck me, man. Yeah, that he was a good player with Derry.
He's great crack, though. We were away in Spain a few years back. Great company, great crack.
Yeah.
But he always speaks so highly of Ollie, and now, of course, he's gone in working with him again. I don't know Ollie, but I always have admired him from afar for the job that he has done, because it's difficult, as everyone says, you bring players up and then they're gone and you're scouring around for players. But the one thing I've always admired him for, there's a real work ethic in that. They could play on a Friday, Ballybuffet against Pats, as you say, and there could be a match Saturday, Bowes against Sligo, and he'll be in Dalymount on the Saturday night watching Bowes and doing his homework and checking out games and going here, there and everywhere. I've always admired him for that. The question I would ask, though, Gar, as a Finn Harps man, and he's there a good few years now, and he's done a great job. But what's the aspiration of a Finn Harps fan are looking for? Is it just to stay in the league every year, or can he dream bigger than that, or win a bit of silverware?
I think, to be honest, right? I mean, I thought last year we should have got to the final of the cup, and you know, like, I was at the Dundalk game where you know, we actually had somebody sent off after 25 minutes. I would have been peeled off the ref that night if I had a good over the wall. But, you know, in the replay then on the Monday night, I missed the replay and we lost or whatever. I really thought we would have had a cup run in his last year. Listen, I think that going back to, like, saying there about some of the better players now, whether it be Barry, or maybe Barry's had his time, he's happy now where he is. Like, but, you know, a load of these younger players coming up now, like, where they have a Derry with, you know, big and, you know, selling a company last year, and their owner being Quids in now, and they're in a good position, bringing them right up above probably anybody in the league. But then you have Pats and Rovers and money being here. It's, you know, I think as time goes on, you know, it is going to be harder to kind of keep matching that, like, you know what I mean? I think as the crowds get bigger and the teams get better, the standard gets better. I mean, the crowds are definitely growing, and they grow for everybody. You know, I've been a proud member of the 500 Club for a long time. Like, there's direct debits. It's small, but it all adds up.
Absolutely.
I mean, obviously, when COVID hit and we needed another change room, we needed 30, 40 grand, whatever it was, we got that. You know,
in terms of the stadium plan as well, yeah, that's lying derelict.
I think, you know, we sort of half touched on it earlier, and we moved away from it, you know what I mean? Like, you know, people like you and Stewie, Kenny, a lot of boys involved with football, you know, Finn Harps have a ground that's been started, then it's been stopped. You know, we're obviously going in now for the tournament. You'll have the diehards saying, oh, why are we hosting a Euros in 2028 or whatever, when our grounds are dilapidated? You know, I really, really do think the government should be chipping in an awful lot more than what they are chipping in. You know, football...
Do you think that penny is finally dropping?
Oh, big time. Yeah. Like, it's... And, you know, right at the top, the icing on the cake, they're going to start seeing full of Evas. I was there on Saturday, Alan, and the family after family after family.
I had my boy there, he loves it.
It was unbelievable.
Kids everywhere.
Now, I was in Donegal Friday, so I drove down from Donegal. A buddy got married, so I would have had my daughter there because it was a 5 o'clock kickoff. It was ideal. We often go to the women's internationals too, but 8 o'clock kickoff kills her. It's too late driving home, you know. Definitely, like, I think now this wave that we're on, it's finally going to start in government buildings, start knocking on there. Like, the crowd that was at the Pats game up at Finn Harps, I mean, we're pretty much at capacity. The first game of the season, Drogheda, was sold out. And this isn't Bowes coming. This isn't Shamrock Rovers or Derry. This isn't back in the day where, you know, it's maybe only the Derby, the Derry game it's full, or a Sligo game. Like, this is every game now. The crowds are getting bigger. Families are coming out. You know, invest in the stadium. Like, we don't need... I'll tell you, I mean... I heard you and Stewie chatting last minute. If you had a load of Tallaght stadiums down
there. Perfect.
Oh, my God. Yeah. A lovely size. Absolutely beautiful. Absolutely perfect. I mean, even going, you look at Dalymount. I mean, how, if you were to start somewhere, right, how is one of the most historic, amazing, brilliant clubs in Bowes in a stadium where you can only stand or sit in a part of it? I mean, I went the last...
It's a disgrace, really.
I was at the Shelburne game. That was the last game I went to. COVID had already kind of started, but we hadn't really stopped people going anywhere. It would have been early March or whatever it was of 2020, was it? And I was in there and I thought, God, when you walk up in our circular road, there's a wee gap in the walkway, right? And you look down and there's a door. When I was a commie chef in the Cav, South Ann Street, back in the mid-90s, I lived in that house.
Really?
And I used to go over and bring stuff to the security boys. I had no money. I had enough money to pay rent, get the bus to work, and walk home some of the times, right? But I used to go to Daly Mountain and go over and say, boys, let me in and bring a lock of buns or bring something out of the rat. And the boys used to let me in for grub just to watch a match. So I have a wee bit of an affinity to Bose. But, you know, at that time, like, the crowds were massive as well, and it was amazing. But the stadium, I mean, if you're going to start somewhere, start there. I've always loved that club. I love them all, really. I mean, I go to them all. I go to all the games, you know, and hopefully now the stuff that is happening, you probably don't want to go into that again every week, like with the crowd trouble, which is something I'd never seen before. It's really sad, you know what I mean? But it stopped me now. It stopped me taking my wee girl to the showgrounds for that game a few weeks ago. I was going to fly back to work on the Tuesday and take her to the game against Sligo on the Monday night. But I was like, do you know what? I just need to...
It's something, yeah, Gar, like, you've heard the shows and we've highlighted it now for 5 or 6 weeks because we were up there tonight at Derry Shamrock Rovers and it was a disgrace what was going on. Obviously, I've spent all my life in the showgrounds growing up, in all the grounds, and we've never been associated with that shite. And... Well, hopefully it won't kick off.
I'll tell you now, like a couple of years ago, Barry was definitely at Derry because there's only one way I'd go in to watch that lot, and that was be if there's a Melton man playing for them, you know. Come on, Boyce, he's up there. Ronan's up there now, young stout. But
good player.
He's going places. If Derry are smart, they'll lock him in long term because you want to see his daddy play.
Good.
Oh, Marty Stout. Well, I'm, class.
I'm good friends with Higgins as well, and they've big plans for both.
I watched him. I'd seen him for the first time in the flesh against Harp. Got a few bits of lip off him too. I was standing at the wall. He was laughing at me, you know. And I was like going, but he stood out a mile. He's an athlete. You know, he's got all the beans about him. You know, I think he's applying himself to really well, is the word on the street. A really, really good guy. His old boy was a Rolls Royce of a centre half. Okay. Yeah, Marty was class. And his uncle, Sean Boyce, maybe not as good in the 11 aside, but you put him on an Astro, he was a magician. I know all them boys, man. So it's in the blood as well, you know. But look, the one thing now, I mean, if all these guys are making an effort to go to the games, and I won't get into it too much, Wade, because as I know you've touched on it plenty, that'll be the only thing now. The last thing football fans need now, you know, you have this thing in Ireland where the GAA would have frowned upon a football fan, which I hate, by the way. I've always hated that sneeriness towards football fans. It was never, ever a thing here. Jesus, like, I would plead for all clubs and Gardaí and whatever, life bans for all these fucking arseholes that make any attempt to bring any sort of negativity now when the league is going in the right direction. All the clubs, Jesus, I've come out of Richmond chatting to Pats fans. I came out of, you know, Harps chatting to Pats fans the other night. I come out of Derry chatting to Derry fans, and every club, you name it, I go buy a ticket. I've walked into Daly Mount, or home end, away end. I just go whatever end looks closer to me. I'm walking into it, whatever way I approach a stadium. I never ever want to get to a stage where that I'm having to think, oh Jesus, I'm going to go to the home end and pretend.
Especially if you're bringing the kids as well.
Terrible. I mean, you know, like, just do not let that fester now. Like, they're going to have to clamp it down. And these youngsters or whatever they're thinking, like, there's no League of Ireland fans. The one beauty that they all had was the love of the league. You know, hashtag greatest league in the world. We all, you know, there's a load of boys on there, like, you know, that, you know, Chambers and the boys at Virgin Media, like, they're big Bose boys, you know what I mean? Like, and Mark Anderson's he's a chef, he's a big Bose man. Gavin Riley, all these guys, like, they're all into it and they're all chatting about it. And the one thing that we all have is a love of the game. You know, you win, you lose. I'm a Harps fan, you know, we draw or lose a lot more than what we win, you know what I mean? Like, but there's no animosity, man, only love of the game, you know what I mean? So they need to knock it on the head. I'd be devastated now to get caught up in something like that at a match.
Yeah, I echo every word, Gaz, and well said. The games that are on this week, I'll be in Daly, Mount Bowes and Derry in town. I want to touch on Derry. Dundalk are at home to UCD. Sligo Rovers are playing Shelburne. That's changed to Friday night. Pats and Drogheda and your beloved Finn Harps are playing Shamrock Rovers. Tough on Friday night, Gar.
I know.
Had a shaky start, Shamrock Rovers.
They have.
Are you a fan of Shamrock Rovers?
Yeah. I like the club. I'm a big fan of Jack Byrne. I got to say, I've always liked him.
Jack.
He's a worldy of a player.
He's a lovely lad.
And he's kind of my size. You know, he's a bit leaner, but he's kind of my size and Wesley's size. You know what I mean? Like, so I just really, really like boys on the ball that just want
the
ball.
Yeah.
He's just lovely to watch. They're a good, good side there. Mandroy playing up front then as well. You know, wastes a wee bit of ball now and again, but he's got a worldie in him at any given time, you know. And I like that, you know. I like a mad fucker that hits one
he's
40 yards.
Mandroy's a maverick. But they've had a shaky enough start. And you look at Derry, who I mentioned there, and obviously you were close to your area. They've had a brilliant start. We mentioned Philip O'Doherty in terms of the money and all sorts. We met him tonight. We were up there. Lovely man. Normal Joe Soap. Like us all, just loves the club, loves the league, wants to get involved and help out. Higgins, though, is very highly regarded.
Yeah.
He was obviously in with Stephen. He's very close with Stephen. You look at the squad he's assembled at the moment. Can they maintain that challenge?
Yeah. I think Derry are going to... You know, obviously, like, as time goes on, you know, maybe the investment has come maybe a wee bit late for this year. Well, not that late for this year, but definitely winning attracts the best players, as you know. You know what I mean? Like, Derry have always had low. Even as a kid growing up in Donegal, like, there was guys used to come in the Derry Academy boys, you know what I mean? Like, they always had the best of gear, the best of facilities. I mean, you cross the border,
really, yeah,
get past the fuckers with the guns, and you were into the Craig and like to play in Derry. Everybody rolling up, like, look at this bastard. Look at everybody just looked so crisp, and they're always well drilled, really, really good trained teams, you know. You know, I go back to the Felix Healy days, man, and whatnot. I do have a big soft spot for Derry. I think they're gonna give a Derry Sligo. Your boys looking decent.
They've had a great start.
I think you know, you chat about a title race. Derry are absolutely in it. They've got some good, good players.
Well, I think with Higgins as well, what he's brought back. You mentioned the Felix Healy days, and there was always, when we went up to the Brandywell, that local element that played for, like, Peter Hutton. I would have played against Eddie McCallion and the
player.
Boys. Liam Coyle was the best I've played against. Liam Coyle, honestly, Gar.
All elbows. Good
touch,
player.
Oh, he was unbelievable. But it was always such a difficult place to go. I think Rory has really bought into that local
and
side.
And the fans in Derry really get behind the team too. Like, they're mad mental. Who is the Derry boys? Like, they really
love it.
You know, it's loud. The Brandywell's where I saw United play for the first time too. I used to love going into Derry. I mean, you chat about the floodlights. I mean, as a young boy in Donegal, that was the first place I seen games under lights. And obviously the new ground now, whatever, like, it's a good, good team, like, and as you say, well managed, really good structure in there. They're gonna be there for the haul, I'd say, this season, definitely. Mm.
Yeah, and I think that's, like, one thing that Stewie has even outlined it. We're 7 weeks into it now. I know some of the clubs have only played 6 games, but it's normally after the first round of games you can gauge whether we're going to have. And he's adamant. I am too. I think that we will have a title race, and hopefully we will, because I think off the back, as I said to you earlier on, of for the first time, a general feeling that the league is going somewhere and there's a lot of eyes on it from outside and positivity around it and hype around the huge attendances. We could do with a real title race this year.
Yeah, well, we always get one. You know, when I lived in Boston, I lived with a boy from Blackburn, Andy Sumner, big Rovers fan, you know, like, and a few of his boys were bolting, but his boy said, he goes, you can't win the league, be in the relegation zone, you know what I mean? So you get something happening at the end of the season. But you're absolutely right. Like, the worst thing for the game would be
Rovers running away with it,
you know what I mean? Jesus, I looked at Rovers there a few weeks ago. I looked at the bench, not the starting 11, and I was like, oh dear lord,
the squad is unbelievable.
Who is beating those boys? And then, as you say, shaky start, a couple of bad results. We're taking points off them on Friday night,
yeah,
big time.
Okay,
yeah, Jack Barry, Connolly, and McNamee are gonna butcher a wee Jacko up there on Friday night, I'll tell you.
Okay, well, no better place to finish it up, Gar. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I really appreciate you coming in. Hopefully, we can go to a game someday.
Oh, big
it's
time.
Just a pity Stewie's not sure he would have loved this,
yeah,
he would have loved it.
Yeah,
we'll have you back sometime.
Definitely,
you can cook for us. He'll sing.
I'll bring the buns the next time.
Bring the buns. But for the live show, you'll come to the live show.
We'd love to.
We had one in the Sugar Club. It was brilliant.
I was going to go, man, and buy a ticket. I'm sure I was caught up at work.
You'll be a guest this year.
All right. Okay. Good. Sounds good.
Guys, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks a million.
All right, brother. Fair play. Take it easy.
That was episode 7, folks. Really loved that chat. I think it's clear for all to see Gar is more passionate than the League of Ireland about me, so that's saying a lot. But yeah, great episode. Thanks as always to Paul Morris, looks after everything in the buttons in the green room area. Stewie unfortunately was not with us this week. He will be back next week. He's a busy boy as well. And of course Benetti Menswear, who are our sponsors. Without them we wouldn't be here, so we appreciate all the help and support as well. We're off to the Aviva to roar on Stephen Kenny's Green Army, and we will talk to you next week. Thanks a million, lads.
Thank you for listening to Cawley's Call, powered by Benetti Menswear. For more interviews like this, please subscribe to my podcast or follow on all my social media channels.